This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast, Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox. When I see
Hey everybody, you're listening to another special edition iFanboy podcast. The Animation Brain Trust is here, and we're talking about Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Mr. Chris Niesman.
Hello.
And Ryan Haupt.
I'm back.
All right, so this is the 17th DC animated feature direct-to-video thing. They keep changing the name of what these things are called. Directed by Jay Oliva, written by Jim Krieg. Based on the Flashpoint event from not so long ago by Jeff Johns and Andy Kubert. What did you guys think of the... Did you guys read the Flashpoint event, any of it, when it was coming out? Yeah?
Yes.
What did you think of it?
I almost completely forgot it, and most of this movie...
Forgot that it existed?
No, like, I remember that it happened, but, like, so much of this movie was going... Oh yeah,
right.
I remember they did do that in the books.
Canterbury Cricket, right? Yeah, no, like yeah, it's yeah. There's a little bit like Barry went into the time stream in the book and then also into our minds and erased it from our memory. I actually spent a lot of time in the written review on ifanboy.com talking about how it's a really ambitious event. This whole idea that, you know, it's sort of it's like It's a Wonderful Life on a grand scale, where Nora Allen, Barry's mom, has been saved by Barry, and because she lived, it's not just because she lived, but other things, there's a sonic boom in time that, because all these reverberations forward and backwards in the time stream, that everything's different. So it's a big Elseworlds event, but it was partly written by Jeff Johns, also written by first timers and editors in a lot of cases, because everyone at the time, all the big talents, were working on the New 52 stuff, which directly followed this.
Yeah.
So
this was the end of the DCU as we knew it. After Flashpoint is kind of what restarted everything, right?
Yeah. Yes. So I mean, they had this publishing initiative that they were going to start this whole new season of new books, and it's in a lot of cases it's a reconfiguration of the status quo for each of these characters. Some of the more successful ones, like Green Lantern and Batman, were allowed to sort of do what they were doing, but others were just, you know, it's sort of a retcon, and this is sort of a in-story explanation for why everything's different, is that Barry messed things up, but then he went back and let his mother die. And then he kind of had to rework things from his sort of memory. that's sort of how I look at it, is that like Barry had to try to remember what the world was like before Flashpoint, and he did kind of his best, and that's what the New 52 is.
This much like the movie, and I know that we're primarily talking about the movie much like the event, does two things. It misses every emotional beat that it should hit, and like most events that we've read over the last 10 or 15 years, the main story is the most boring of them. It's the side stories. I would watch the Azzarello Rizzo Batman story, sure, as an animated feature 100 times
Vengeance, I think,
before I would want to watch the Flashpoint.
Well, what's the actual through line?
That's the question.
That was one of the biggest problems I had with this movie. Was
there is none?
Well, I think there's an attempt at whenever we go back to the core group, it's Barry and Thomas Wayne, who's Batman in this universe.
Yeah,
and Victor, who's Cyborg, and they're off down the Yellow Brick Road to go and find the Superman of this world, who only Barry knows of because he's from another world where there is a Superman, and so they have to figure out who is the Superman of this world.
They never explain that, and to begin with the movie, they never explain what happened. How did Barry's mom survive? They never show any of that. They never explain the significance of it, and it starts off with Barry basically just wakes up in this new reality, and we don't know why. And so it's supposed to, I guess, be a murder mystery of who killed Barry's mom, which we never find out, or how Barry saved.
That's also part of Flash Rebirth, though. Part of Flash Rebirth, which isn't a part of this project.
You mean there's other material that you needed to be privy to for this story to make sense?
I think there's a case to be made for that, yeah. I found myself watching this thinking of the people who had no previous knowledge of the Flashpoint event or things that surrounded it, and wondered, would this make sense to them? And there's the moment where Barry deduces that this Batman is Thomas Wayne, and that it was Bruce who died that night. I was like, that seems like a really weird jump for that character to have made, given what information is there on screen. And for an audience to just like, oh, well, all right. It's like I feel like they would be rewinding and trying to see what they missed. But there isn't really evidence there for Barry to work with.
Ryan, you're a science guy, right?
Correct.
That's your thing.
Science guy. That's what it says on his
science guy
on his card.
I think that title's already taken, but yeah.
And I know that they talked about the time boom, or whatever not the sonic boom, but the time boom.
Right.
In your theoretical sciences, is a time boom, is it capable of knocking a spaceship off course by several hundred miles?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll send you the paper that
okay.
They describe the model system for explaining that phenomenon. It's very it's really common, Chris. It happens.
I think it's just...
Well, that's the question. It's like, okay, so Barry's mom lives. Does that actually cause the ripple in time that causes Bruce to die and not his parents?
Right, well, they know that people are going to ask that question and say, well, what is Nora Allen living have to do with stuff that happened... The changes that would need to have happened before
it was the actual breaking of the time barrier.
Yeah, and so it was the meddling, but it's problematic that they even have to explain that in the story. They have to come up with an excuse that it's not just things that happened after that event. It's also it reverberates.
The core problem with this movie and that event is that. I'm sorry, Geoff Johns, Barry Allen isn't that effing important. Stop trying to make the Flash the center of the DC universe, because you know what? He's not. And nor is his mother so important that her death or life would have the butterfly effect of changing the entire DC universe. Stop trying to sell me that bag of rotten fruit.
Well, okay, I buy that she's maybe the center of his universe and that he would do something this drastic and then that meddling would cause a ripple effect. I don't think that his meddling with the time stream says that the Flash is the most important pivotal person in the DC universe. I think it just says that he's doing something where where Professor Zoom is actually like makes kind of a point that you're doing something that's a bit selfish. You're doing something that's maybe noble to try to save a person's life, but you're not thinking about all of the ramifications that surround that.
That's back to me believing that this missed all of the emotional beats. It never really touches on that.
Yeah, it suffers from the same problem that a lot of the most problematic DC animated features suffer from in that 75-minute running time. You can't do all of this in 75 minutes and without sacrificing character weight. They can do all the cool stuff, and I think we've had a lot of comments about this is a really polarizing movie and it was a polarizing event as well. There's a lot of people who really, really liked that event and got something out of it. There's also people that liked or didn't like the comics event and really enjoyed this movie. I rated this a 2.5 on the site out of 5, and there are people that are saying no, you're way off. It's at least a 4.5 out of 5. And
did you root for anyone in this movie? Was anyone in this movie not a complete douchebag?
Some of the argument is just that it has characters that they love and they remembered seeing, you know, it's like it's Grifter's in it, you know, and I got to see the Demon Etrigan, you know, rhyming and stuff. And you know what? I can understand that brings enjoyment and that might be what you want from an escapist kind of movie. Looking at the film objectively, there's just a lot of structural problems and it all comes down to the sacrifice of character. There's too much going on, and I think it needed a bit of editorial where we say, okay, what are the most interesting things about this event? Let's clear away the rest of that. Yes. Because as interesting as that is, it doesn't make for a rich, fully realized Elseworld. It makes for something super schizophrenic and distracting.
It was a perfect animated adaptation of a modern comic book event. It made absolutely no fucking sense and left you with all of these really cool, shallow moments that it's like, oh, Batman just shot that guy through the head. That was so cool. Wait, why did he do that? Why is that important? So you have all of these nice little, you know, 20-page cliffhangers woven in to an animated feature that at the end of it doesn't really tell much of a story. I mean, a loose story maybe, but enough, you know, enough pseudoscience and bad plot lines and hanging threads that, yeah, I'm coming down hard on this because honestly, it was terrible. And I haven't even gotten to the animation, which is the worst I've seen come out of DC. I'm not expecting everything to be a Bruce Timm, Batman the Animated Series or what they went on to do with Justice League. But my God, when Young Justice is running circles around the animation quality of a feature length, something's wrong because the animation in this was awful.
I will agree with you that Young Justice is the high watermark for their character models and animation of late.
Yeah.
I don't think the animation is that far off in this. I think what's problematic is some of those character models with, you know, having, you know, the sort of bee stung Aquaman and the super jowly Thomas Wayne Batman. Those are it's subjective because I really like this overall style. And I think there's some really great looking fight sequences in here.
Yeah, I felt like the characters looked good when they were moving, but whenever they focused on a static shot of a character, I didn't like the look.
It was bad rendering. Bad rendering, and it's this, once again, trying to force an anime style into the DC animated universe. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, it was kind of neat for the, what was the Batman one?
Gotham Knights.
It was kind of neat with Gotham Knights to see some neat Japanese animation styles mixed mm-hmm. in there, and what it's like. Okay, yeah, really cool. You know, the Matrix. You know, the Animatrix. You know, that's kind of neat to see in 5, 10, 15 minute chunks. But this they cut from a couple different styles a couple times, and it was so apparent that this was an animation house that was doing this, and like Ryan said, the stills were rendered very poorly. The action scenes were okay, but certainly not the best that we've seen from the DC animated line before. So I mean, not even on the animation level did this thing succeed.
What do you think the strongest was visually? Not I mean. You're saying like what, you know, other movies that they've done have been stronger. What?
I really liked especially the Wonder Woman, the choreography, yes, and execution of Wonder Woman.
The last sequence in what, like the epilogue in Wonder Woman?
It was the Doomsday story. It was the Batman Superman, where they go to Apocalypse.
Sure. That was a good one.
I thought the animation in that was really tight, especially the choreography of the fight sequences.
Yeah, it's Superman, Batman, Apocalypse.
Yeah, I thought that was good. I thought Under the Red Hood was really good.
It's a really good one, too.
That's quite
I like the Crisis on Two Earths.
Yeah, very good. Mm-hmm. It's those are probably my three favorite out of that you could take, like the JLA. Mm-hmm. Universe. I think those three have been probably the most successful. You know, even like New Frontier had its ups and downs. It's hard to get that the Darwin Cook feel mm-hmm, in that. Yeah. But I thought it was more of a success than a failure. Where this, I don't know. I felt like they picked the wrong animation house to do this. It's like they wanted it to be an anime, and then they're like, "Oh no, now it needs to look like the miniseries event." And yeah, so it didn't even, if it had been a lot prettier to look at, I probably would have been
interesting. Okay, I can see what you're saying. I actually thought it was quite nice to look at in a lot of places.
Aside from
a few character models.
Very uneven, I thought.
That's fair. Ryan, you've been a little quiet. What did you think?
It's always fun to have an Elseworld tale. Mm-hmm. And so it's always fun having like the world building and seeing different nooks and crannies of this different place. But without the cohesive storyline to kind of hold the movie together, it felt hollow by the end of it. Mm-hmm. I felt like by the end of this movie that it was a lot longer than 75 minutes. I was surprised to hear you guys say that it was only 75 because it felt long. I was also really surprised by just how incredibly violent this movie was.
It is. It's actually way, it's worth noting.
Way more so than anything else I've seen from the these direct-to-DVD animated movies.
Our friend Vito mentioned it on Facebook and said, you know, if you're a parent, don't, you know, and are planning on watching this with your kids, you know, don't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Definitely don't. And my immediate reaction was like, well, it's PG-13, you know, like it's, I think that's fair. And then I watched it and it was like, brutal. You know what? It's really pretty brutal. It's a hard PG-13.
That's one of my, just in general, that's one of my major nitpicks on stories like this.
Okay.
When you do an alternate timeline, it can be very cool. It's like you look at Age of Ultron or Days of Future Past or, you know, this, there's any number of the alternate reality, you know, divergent timelines.
Are you citing Age of Ultron as cool?
No. What I'm saying is that when you play in those sandboxes,
Gotham
of the
by Gaslight.
No.
Oh, okay.
That's not one that I'm citing. I'm citing those other ones because they kill so many characters.
Okay.
It's like if you want to act like you have the balls to kill off all of these characters because it's an alternate timeline and the story is going to be wrapped up, I'm a little sick of the convenience of shooting She-Hulk through the head and dropping her, or, you know, Grifter taking 12 arrows to the chest and getting dropped down. It's like, oh,
he took one in the head too.
It's so shocking. Yeah. Oh yeah, right through the head. It's like, it's so shocking. It's so badass. It's like, you know what? If you have big enough balls to do that, do it in the regular comics. I'm tired of the alternate timeline stories being an excuse to kill as many characters as possible. It's the for shock value. It's like, if you're not willing to do it in the mainline series and not bring them back in 6 months, you know, don't you know, stop jerking me around with the whole shock value of offing a bunch of characters in
an alternate. I guess one in the defense of this movie, I like that it gave a far harsher view of war than, you know, like the Justice League cartoon had wartime things happen where, you know, the Thanagarians invaded or they actually went back in time to World War II. And it always feels a bit less than because, you know, they're shooting the rifles out of the Nazis' hands, which isn't exactly how things went down, if my understanding of history is correct. So there was a part of me that was like, okay, yeah, war is brutal, and this is actually putting that across when, you know, they stab Lex Luthor with a trident,
right?
Or Billy Batson.
In terms of plot, like they do a good job of saying just how harrowing this world is and why Barry needs to act and why he needs to make that difficult decision at the
end. Right, because kind of the corollary to Chris's point about Elseworlds or alternative reality stories is another problem that I sometimes have with the alternative reality stories is that they end better than the DCU could ever possibly end. Mm-hmm. The one I remember in particular is, what if Superman's rocket had landed on Apocalypse and he was raised as Darkseid's son?
Right.
And by the end of the movie,
which is awesome.
Like by the end of the movie, you know, Superman has taken over New Genesis. You know, Orion is living happily on Earth, and everything's better than it would have been if he'd landed in Kansas.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So I'm just like, that's amazing. So you're saying he should have landed on Apocalypse?
Yeah, that our reality is the worst one. That's awesome,
right? I love that. And so I guess it's also a little bit refreshing when the alternate reality is something that you want to get away from, rather than realizing that it's actually an improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just so there's an element that yes, this world is successfully dark and just the situation is appropriately grave that you want to get away with it. The side effect is that as a viewer, I don't really want to return to that.
Right.
And also it's in service to the plot, but not necessarily in service to these characters who they're not, you know, real sentient people, but the property deserves a little bit more respect than to say that, you know, just because Wonder Woman has a bad date doesn't mean that she's going to go around beheading people. Like, I don't think they do a good enough job, you know, laying that pipe to say that this is how Wonder Woman becomes this horrible tyrant. And the same for Aquaman.
Because they walk that line and they fall on both sides of it. Why is Superman good in this movie? Because Superman is always good. No matter what he goes through, no matter what he does, Superman at his core is a hero.
Mm-hmm.
So why
killed a lot of people in this movie though?
By accident. you know, he does the heroic thing in the end, but that's because he's Superman, right? Superman's a hero. Superman does heroic things. So what does that say about Aquaman and Wonder Woman and, you know, any number of, you know, the other heroes that are engaged in this horrible, you know, genocide and war? It's like, so is Wonder Woman not the equal of Superman in, you know, is she not destined to be heroic? What does that
right,
say?
Right. It's like in our world, she's only noble because of certain conditions. It's all cause and effect.
Well, clearly because Nora Allen died.
It was a shockwave that went out in all directions, Ryan. You got to understand, it's not just that one lady who had a very...
You got to think fourth dimensionally, Marty.
Very poorly written tombstone, I have to add.
I saw that post. That's hilarious. But you know, it gets back to the point of, you know, these heroes are destined to be heroic. That is, it's their nature. It's their DNA.
And maybe not
often. Huh?
Maybe not often.
Maybe not.
Well, yeah, just, you know, just the alien ones, I guess. So I had a problem with that because they really kind of, you know, try and hammer home that point that, you know, Superman is heroic. Why? Because he's Superman. Okay, what about Diana and Arthur? I guess not.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and it just feels, I mean, it's not just about like, it's not just about like fan entitlement. Like, I want my Aquaman to always be good. It's a petty choice.
Yes.
And they don't do the proper groundwork to justify it, to justify these radical changes in the character. So that's sort of where we fall down on it. We haven't mentioned really the performances because there's like a gabillion of them.
It was nice to have Kevin Conroy back for a little bit.
Yeah. And you know what? Let's, just in fairness, you said that, you know, not a lot of emotional weight. The final scene, I think, is pretty successful.
Yeah, that's about the only thing that works.
I was distracted by the piping on the costume, but beyond that.
Yeah, like, you know, Flash goes in and stops his past self from saving his mother and then says, you know what, I could use some gold piping on this costume. I feel like it's about time. Delivering.
Oh, I was gonna say, I gotta imagine when the animators got those script pages, they were just like, "Damn it, ugh, really? Piping. All these extra lines, we gotta animate.
We gotta change the costume now." Yeah, it's like, why?
It's nitpicking. I think it's a small thing, but I think that, you know, I think the Flash going to the Batcave and delivering that message and a nice, not, like it's
that was
not
the only,
too
that
overblown.
Was the, it was the only emotional beat that they hit in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
I did enjoy the Justice League taking care of the bombs on the Rogues.
The prologue, like the sort of the pre title sequence, where you're sort of in the regular continuity and
right. Professor Zoom has put bombs on each of the Rogues' belts, and the Justice League shows up to help, and they each kind of have to solve the bomb problem a different way. I think my favorite was Aquaman because he just throws the top in the water. The Flash just told you to get as far away from the city as possible, and your solution is to throw him off a pier.
I just the awkward moment between Superman and who did he have? Heatwave?
Heatwave.
And takes him just to a hill, and then just cups the belt buckle in his hands.
That was awesome. That was pretty cool.
That's all Superman needs to do. But it's awkward.
Just stand here. And he waves like, dude, this is really close to my junk.
I know. And I love that, like, more than once, you know, you see when they fix the bomb, the Rogue has to, like, grab their belt to keep, even though they're all wearing, like, one-piece jumpsuits, but they all grab their belt like their pants are going to fall off.
It is a good showcase for, like, the Flash's powers. And, like, when the Flash is
chasing... No, because he does that weird, like, Hadouken with his hand thing that made no sense. That pissed me off.
Oh,
well, it's that particular part is a good showcase for the Justice League's powers, I would say, for showing different ways that they would solve that same problem.
Yeah,
and I like that it's, what is it, Captain Atom and
Cyborg,
yeah, are doing like space surgery, like on the belt buckle.
Yeah. Green Lantern still just gets to make a bubble. That's all he's needed for.
That's all he's needed for.
So Batman fix the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah, the opening sequence was probably the most, that and the Barry Bruce moment at the end, those were successful.
I enjoyed the scenes with Hal Jordan. Nathan Fillion's Hal Jordan was always nice. It's always a nice addition.
Well, it's Nathan Fillion. I mean,
yeah, but I'm saying, you know, it's just kind of a vignette thrown in just so you get a little bit of Hal Jordan, but I liked it.
No, and he always is a good performance because, like, there's so many of these where it just feels like a cold reading from a lot of the actors. And
Cyborg was very flat.
That's a tough role because I think he was also trying to be like I'm the Terminator or something. Like, I don't know exactly what he was doing.
Here's another thing for Geoff Johns.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about Cyborg. Stop. Nobody cares.
There's a big cyborg
body cares. Stop. I know that you wrote Teen Titans for like 5 years. Nobody cares.
Cyborg is just creepy to me because, like, especially when he gets dismantled and things, I was like, that's gross.
Nobody
cares. Yeah, I mean, they, like, Aquaman ripped him apart and.
Yeah, like, there's this weird body horror thing that is, it doesn't, I don't know, tonally, it's just very weird. And so anyways, next up, they're going to be doing...
Oh, wait, that's interesting, because did you guys watch the after the credits thing? They're taking a note from the Marvel playbook, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And do they have
shawarma at the end?
Exactly, it's exactly what happened. Turns out that if Barry Allen didn't eat shawarma on the right day, everything would have been ruined.
So what did we get in there?
So, but they did like a little after credit stinger where a boom tube portal opens in space and a bunch of parademons fly at you. And I guess the next one coming up is a war with Apocalypse.
Yeah, Darkseid's coming. It's the first, they're doing sort of the first arc of the Justice League book from the New 52.
More Cyborg, Chris.
Brain Trust, where I get to say, wow, I thought that it couldn't get any worse than Flashpoint.
I did not like that particular storyline. And it's like, it's the forced thing where they're all at odds and they don't like each other. And there's some ego happening and they have to learn to be a team. And I don't need that anymore. I like them getting along.
I miss Dwayne McDuffie.
One of my favorite part about watching, they always have the, you know, like the preview of like a little mini doc of what to expect, and they show you some character models and things, and they have, you know, all the directors and Andrea Romano talking, and Andrea Romano has done a bazillion of these, and she gets to this part and she actually like says, I think at this point you really just make sure that all of the actors sound like they're from the same world. And that's good. It just sounds like she's just completely defeated. Like, I don't think there's anything really compelling to her. That's the way it comes off.
I mean, are they, I hate to say this because I enjoy talking to you guys every couple months or so. Right. I mean, are they spent? Are they done?
Well, they don't have Bruce Timm anymore. It's not Bruce Timm.
Is the cupboard getting pretty bare?
I think we've talked often about storylines we'd like to see made into an animated movie in this style.
Yes.
Yeah. So why aren't they picking any of them?
So they're not listening, or they don't know what they're talking about.
Comics to pick some pretty awesome stories, or you know what? They have some pretty talented people that can come up with some original shit. And I'm sorry, but Flashpoint, what a terrible choice. It was not a really good comic to begin with, and then to make it worse in an animated feature. It's come on, guys.
Well, I think I was
confused why they changed the name, because they never actually said the word paradox. So why couldn't you have just left it as Flashpoint? Like, they never pointed out what the paradox
is. They're doing some weird things with branding.
What was
like
the paradox, by the way?
I don't know.
I guess the paradox was that Barry and Professor Zoom shared the Speed Force enough that they were at odds. I don't know.
They never said what the paradox.
It's a science word. It's a cool word. That's why they used it. They have they had Superman Unbound. I understand why they couldn't call it Superman Brainiac, because they've already done something with that title. So I don't know. But I think you hit on it, Chris, is that they could do something original. I think that would be much more successful than trying to do adaptations.
That's kind of what they did with Crisis on Two Worlds. That was not a direct adaptation of any one storyline. And it was really good. And that was what they did with the Justice League cartoon, where every once in a while they do an episode that adapted an actual comic storyline, like for The Man Who Has Everything. Yes. But they actually adapted it. They didn't just copy it. And then they had a lot of stories that were totally original. I mean, season two of Justice League Unlimited, where it's a single arc throughout the entire season that builds until an awesome epilogue with Batman Beyond. Fantastic.
Because they're not selling these. Well, they're not selling these a lot anyway. But they're not. But whatever copies they are selling, it's not because those people are going through Best Buy or browsing on Amazon and seeing a storyline that they love. It's those characters. You know, the Batman ones are the ones that sell the best, and you know, and so they're basically doing Batman ones, Superman ones, and Justice League ones. and Justice League is sort of the catch-all. You know, whatever that isn't specifically a Batman and Superman or Batman and Superman becomes a Justice League thing. And I think all they really need is that name and then a good concept. And they have good writers working for them doing things, you know, like Young Justice. And they're not doing that anymore. So my preference would be I'm not even clamoring for adaptations of certain things because they can't really handle them in 75 minutes.
No.
I think what they should do is, like you said, look at original concepts, get some interesting characters, or like Ryan said, do just a really loose adaptation. Take like two or three things, like take the elements from those great stories and say, what would work in this time frame? And do something that's specifically engineered for a 75-minute animated movie.
If they wanted to do a Flash or a JLA story featuring the Flash, man, just get some talented people together and come up with a really good 75-minute story of a JLA with the Flash as the centerpiece of it. And make that. You know what? We're going to buy it. We're going to go out. My dogs agree. We're going to like it. Why try and shoehorn in a not very good comic book story and try and make a better than the source material animation? I don't get it. I mean, this movie, more than anything, should show DC that they need to stop trying to bend mediocre comic stories into being even more mediocre animations.
Part of that, like, just you saying it sounds unreasonable, like get good writers and just do it, but they have those things in place.
The
talent that they've been working with can produce this, you know.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know who that person is. Is it Paul Dini now?
No,
you know,
he's over at Marvel. He's doing the Hulk animated series.
I would have said, you know, Dwayne McDuffie, you know, rest in peace, that, you know, he was a guy that got it. You know, where are the Ben 10 guys? You know, it's like, if you're going to do this, I mean, there are so...
They're over at Marvel. They're working on the Avengers Assemble thing.
Are we starting to see a trend? Are we starting to see a problem that, you know what, if you don't facilitate the best creative in the industry, that your end product is going to be this train wreck
right. Of
a movie? It's, you know, start investing in your talent.
Devil's advocate here, someone is listening to this podcast and yelling that the Ben 10 guys are working on that Avengers animated series and it's not that great. So I don't know, but let's look. So upcoming projects, Justice League War is going to be out in early 2014. That's going to be our next one. And that's the opening Geoff Johns, Jim Lee origin story. Then we're going to see at some point Son of Batman. So we're going to see the Damian story. And Batman Assaults on Arkham, which instead of looking comics, they're going to be looking to the video games, which are actually a lot of fun. And the first two, at least, were written by Paul Dini. Mm-hmm. So Batman Assault on Arkham, that has potential. Those are cool games, and they've cool stuff happening in the stories. So I don't know. But yeah, original content would be great. And yes. I kind of miss those showcase shorts, but we're never going to see
them. Yeah, those were fun.
Yeah.
My final thing was I couldn't help but chuckle to myself when Wonder Woman exclaims, "Captain Thunder!"
That was kind of good. Name.
Is that, I don't remember, like, I couldn't remember if that was directly from the Flashpoint.
I don't remember stuff. Either, but I still laughed. And does he have scars on his face? Why did every character in this movie just had a scar on their face for no reason?
Because it was bad, Ryan. Because it was bad.
I'm going to write a fan fiction story where it explains the scar with a battle that Captain Thunder had with Takitani, and he gets scratched across the face.
If this thing had had Takitani, it would have been better.
It had the Canterbury Cricket.
The Canterbury Cricket did not. And I love it that it's just like, I'm the Canterbury Cricket. I'm in this.
And yep. Lois is like, I know.
I am present. Okay.
No, Cricket.
No.
Lois was pretty good.
It was Dana good. Delaney. Yeah. But, like, I wanted more of that. I,
I wanted Alfred. I wanted like secret agent man Alfred. That was awesome. But they never had it in here.
Canterbury Cricket couldn't save this thing. I don't know. So yeah, that's how we came down on this one. I know this has been a polarizing movie.
I didn't hate it. It just wasn't good.
Yeah. Well, you can. So talk about it in the comments under this podcast or over at my written review. Let us know what you thought. And if you're looking forward to Justice League War. Until next time, I'm Paul.
I'm the angry old man, Chris.
I'm Ryan the Scientist. And I kind of rhyme. Good job, Chris.
Way to go, science guy.